So this week's portion is called Shmini, and it means the eighth. And there's a lot of different aspects in this portion that we can talk about. I'm going to try and zoom it down to maybe two, probably one. So in the portion, the Creator commands Moses to tell Aaron and his sons about the different kinds of offerings and the specific rules that need to be given in the tabernacle. And Aaron and his sons had to remain at the entrance, not go in, for 7 days and nights. On the eighth day, which is the name of the portion, Shmini, Moses calls Aaron and his sons and all the elders of the nation, and he tells Aaron to bring animals and grain offerings and bring them before the Creator. So they put everything together, and they brought the offerings to the front of the tabernacle, and the entire community comes forward and stands before the Creator. And Moses says, and I'm going to quote, "This is what the Lord has commanded that you do, so that the glory of God will reveal itself to you." Okay, so this is the commandment that was given. Then Moses says to Aaron, "As the Lord commands, come forward to the altar and sacrifice your sin offering and your burnt offering. Then sacrifice the people's offerings for their atonement." And that's exactly what Aaron does. Aaron sacrificed the animals. Then he lifted his hands toward the people and blessed them. That's where we have the blessing of the high priests. If there are people that bless their children on Friday night, that's where it's from. And then Aaron and Moses go inside the tabernacle, and when they come out again, they bless the people, and there was like the glory of the Creator was revealed in front of all the people. And so there was a fire. Can you imagine? Like, everything is glowing, there's a fire, and all of the offerings were consumed, and everything, you know, like the fat parts and everything, you can just imagine all of these. It's like a movie, like Indiana Jones movie. And all the people saw this, and they were happy, and it was a very happy time. Now, there was so much happiness that Aaron's sons, Nadab and Abihu, each took a pan and put fire in it, and then they put incense on it. And they brought it before the Creator, and it says in the portion, they brought a strange fire that God had not commanded, and the fire went from the pan and basically consumed them, and they died. So Moses says to Aaron, "This is what the Creator said," and I quote again, because the quotes are very important. "I will be sanctified through those who are nearest me. Thus I will be honored before the entire peoples." And Aaron was silent. He didn't say anything. And they carried Aaron's sons from the tabernacle to outside the camp. And Moses says to Aaron, don't show that you're mourning, because maybe the Creator will become angry if you show that you're mourning. But know that the entire community of Israel is with you, and they're all mourning for you together. Then God spoke to Aaron saying, basically not to be drunk, because what happened was, I'll explain. So the Creator saying to Aaron, make sure that you don't drink, and that when you and your sons enter the tabernacle, you're completely pure so that you don't die. And this is a law for all time throughout your generations to distinguish between the sacred and the profane, the contaminated and the pure. And then after that, there's a whole big section on kosher laws and what animals are kosher and what animals are not kosher. So we have a lot of things in this portion. And the first question that comes up is, why did Nadav and Abihu die? And before I go into that, I wanted to share something from the Zohar about the beginning of studying, the beginning of the Torah. And I want you to look at the letter Bet, because that's the letter that we're going to be talking about. So notice that it's open on one side and closed on the other. Okay? So, Michelle, go ahead.
Rabbi Yitzchak said, "Why is the Bet on one side, open on one side and closed on the other?" He explains that when a man comes to attach himself to the Torah, it is open to receive him and to join him. But when he closes his eyes to it and walks in the other way, it is closed from the other side, like the bet, as it is written. If you forsake me one day, I will forsake you too. There will be no opening until he returns to attach himself to it face to face and never abandons it again. Therefore, the Torah first approaches man, calling to him, to you, O men, I call. And also, she utters her voice in the squares, she cries in the chief place of concourse, and the entrance of the gates. In the city, she utters her words.
Okay, so basically, if a person is ready to connect to the Torah, and the letter Bet is the first letter of the Torah, Bereshit, then it's open, right? It's open. And a person can connect as much as they want. If they decide to disconnect, not to connect, it's closed. And it won't open again until a person makes that step of going closer to the Creator. Okay, let's go on.
Rabbi Yehuda said, the Bet is a form of two roofs and one line joining them.
Wait, what? So, hold on 1 second. Oh. So you can see the bottom and the top are two roofs and the line is joining them.
What does it signify? One roof above is for heaven, which is Zeran Pin, and the other below for earth, which is Malchut. The Holy One, blessed be He, who is Yesod, unites them and receives them.
Clear? Everybody understood that? Pretty clear.
Therefore, he who is occupied in the Torah is as if he is occupied in the Holy Name. We have learned that the whole Torah is one supernal holy name, and because of that, it begins with the Bet, for it comprises the Holy Name, namely the three Vavs within the secret written in the verses, and went and it came and stretched out, the three columns of Zeran Pin, and it alludes to the three bonds which influence faith, which is Malchut.
So basically, it's the three columns. You can see the Vavs, it's like one, two, three Vavs. And the connection is that this is one of the names of the Creator, and we have the power to connect to it. It's there for us if we want to connect to it. So what does this have to do with the portion, and why did Nadav and Avihu die? Why were they burnt? So it says that on the eighth day of the tabernacle, of the consecration of the tabernacle, there was an incredible happiness. There was an incredible joy. It was a state of bliss. So can you imagine, can you imagine that all the wars stop, everything stopped, all the war, by the way, there's a war going on right now. So everybody send energy. Yes? Okay. So imagine that all stops, everyone's in peace, everyone loves each other, it's like Woodstock, like a big, big, big Woodstock, and everyone's ecstatic and there's happiness. Nadav and Avihu thought that it was the time of Messiah. And in the time of Messiah, there's no specific rules of which offering they're supposed to give. So it's not that they sinned. And we have to understand, these people were on an incredibly high level of consciousness. It's not just like you and me going to the tabernacle and deciding to, burn incense and what kind we want. And these were high souls. And they knew that they were going to die. And then they knew that they were going to sacrifice something for the people. What was the lesson? There are certain rules, there are certain things that happen in the universe. There's a system that exists. Most of us pick and choose from the system. We want to do this, we don't want to do that. I'll do this today, I won't do this today, it's not a big deal. But it's there in front of us, and it's a pathway, and the pathways of the prayer and meditation are the things that can take us there. Now, the key, because what happens is when in the beginning, when a person finds spirituality or finds religion, you know how there are people who find religion and they go, whoop, they become extreme, right? Or they find spirituality and now they want to be by themselves on a mountain. Everything is extreme. The key is to being able to balance between the secrets of the Torah, spirituality, and physicality, between our body and our soul. Because what happened to Aaron's sons? What did they do? They didn't want to connect to the body anymore. They didn't want to connect to physicality anymore. They wanted to be one with the Creator. They wanted to get closer to the Creator. So basically, they released their soul. they died in a fire. They released their soul. It's one of the kinds of death, actually. So if we are so extreme, our soul can leave our body. And if we're only interested in physicality, then we can't even start spirituality. So it's all about the balance between the two. And the best way to accept that the soul, we have to accept that our soul has been put into our body for a reason. And that reason is to bring it closer to the Creator. But once we start that, we have to know that there's a system. We can't just come one day and say, okay, you know, I'm going to create a whole new way of doing things. No, there's a system in place. That's exactly why one of the commentaries says that they didn't listen to what the Creator said. Even though they were high souls, even though they knew what was going to happen, they still didn't listen to the commandment. So one of the ways, obviously, about caring, about connecting to the soul and doing these things is by caring about people. Because Nadav and Avihu reached that level that they knew exactly what was going to happen, and they were doing it for us to be able to learn the lesson of going in the way of the Creator, thinking about how to balance our lives, thinking about how in a physical world we can help another person. You know, thinking about now how we can help all those people in the Middle East, thinking about how we can help our neighbor. Those are the basic things that we can do. The minute the sons of Aaron died, they reincarnated into Pinchas. So they never really died. And there's a commentary that says that they were kissed by the kiss of death. What does that mean? It was a sweet death. They didn't suffer. While that was happening, imagine, I don't know if you remember the story of Pinchas. Pinchas was a high priest, and he decided that he was going to kill this person who was causing an amount of chaos and death. Now, a high priest is not allowed to kill. A high priest is not allowed to get close to blood. But he decided he was going to do it anyway, and he sacrificed himself. And the minute that he died, Nadav and Avihu went into his soul, into his body. So he was a reincarnation of, they were a reincarnation of Pinchas. So there's a whole story about Nadav and Avihu. And we have to think about the spiritual soul and the physical body. And it's always a pull between the two. And, you know, there's a story about one of the Kabbalists, the Baal Shem Tov. And there's one day there's a man that comes, and he's crying, and he's, you know, he goes to the Baal Shem Tov, and he says, listen, my son is really, really, really sick, and I don't know what to do. You know, please, you know, can you pray? I know you're a high soul. Can you pray? Can you meditate? Can you do something to change the decree? And the Baal Shem Tov goes, and he starts meditating, and he starts praying. And he comes back to the father, and he says, there's nothing I can do. The gates are closed. I can't do anything. And the father is shocked. And he goes in the carriage, and he's starting to go back, and he hears someone running behind him. And he sees the Baal Shem Tov. So he stops the wagon. And the Baal Shem Tov says to him, listen, the gates didn't open, but I want to be able to cry with you. I want to be able to sit with you and cry with you. And they started crying together, and that's what opened the gates. So for us to reach that level of Nadav and Avihu, and, you know, think about, like, I can tell you, I don't think I'm there. You know, we go through our day on robotic mode. We just, you know, turn off the alarm clock, and that's it, we're going, and we're going, and we're going, and we're going. And, you know, if you're like me, I don't stop until I hit the pillow. I hit the pillow, I'm out. That's it. There's no one to talk to. Sometimes Eliyahu says, you know, hi, I want to talk to you. I'm like, I'm snoring. I'm gone. But we don't think. We don't stop to think. What are we doing? Are we going through the path that the Creator put for us? Did we decide consciously today to go according to the system? Because there is a system. And most of you know that you can't cheat the system. You can try, but it doesn't usually work. We can't cheat the system. So, again, the balance between the physical and the soul of a man. So the striving to escape the physical life has to be kept in check by bringing the spirituality. By bringing the spirituality down. And when a person's involvement in something can threaten to overwhelm him, he's so caught up in a disease or in chaos or in challenges. And Eliyahu was going to talk later about challenges and what it means on a higher level. We need to stop. We need to stop and think, okay, what tools do I have? What can I do? Who can I help? And so that divine fire that consumed the souls of Nadav and Avihu is the very fire that's in us, in every one of our souls. And that soul's burning desire to tear free of physicality is the source of it, is the source of Nadav and Avihu coming closer to the Creator. That's what fuels us. That fire is the fire inside of us that wants us to get closer to the Creator. The only thing is sometimes the strange fire, that wasn't a commandment from the Creator. And so sometimes we get wrapped up in things that we can do to get closer to the Creator. But it's there already. It's written for us. There's a way to do it. So after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, God specifically said that it shouldn't be repeated. And it says, and God spoke to Moses after the death of Aaron's two sons, who came close to God and died. Speak to Aaron your brother that he come not at all times into the holy so that he die not. So the purpose of the Creator putting a limit on the closeness is not the closeness between the Creator and us. It's the closeness between us and the Creator so that we don't go overboard, so that we don't lose the balance and we listen. We listen to the messages. We listen to the spiritual rules of the universe. We listen to humanity around us so that we listen. Because they were on such a high level, and they, you know, that's why when people get high, they think they're one with the Creator. No, it was the same level of getting high. But they were high on the happiness and the joy of all of the eighth day of the consecration of the tabernacle. So that feeling of high is what they had. And so the commandment is helping us, it's empowering us as physical human beings to be able to get closer to the Creator, but not in a strange way. What was the strange way? The strange way was the fire, but what could be the strange way for us? What do you think could be a strange way for us to get closer to the Creator? Like not a normal way. What do you think? Okay, so interesting. So a strange way, okay. We were put on this earth all together, right? And there's a million different laws and rules of how we should act with each other, right? So a person who isolates themselves from the world because they want to be closer to the Creator has just cut himself off. A person who says, I'm busy with my own, you know the line that I hate the most? I'm busy with my own tikkun. Really? Really? You're busy with yourself. You're not busy with anybody else. We were put, you know, if we were supposed to be by ourselves, each of us would have our own island and our own car and our own private jet, which I wouldn't mind. But we were all put together for a reason. So it's strange. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when you started with that example, I would be an extreme in thinking, oh, a monk and people in Tibet who go up to the mountain, like truly alone. But you're even talking about us.
Yeah, we all are. The minute we separate ourselves and we use the excuse that we're trying to get closer to the Creator, we just separated ourselves completely. And that can be used also when someone thinks that they're religious or someone thinks that they're spiritual. Because someone who thinks they're religious and does everything by the commandments but forgets one commandment. You know what that commandment is? Human dignity. Human dignity. Because what happens, there are people, and I have nothing against them, but there are people who are completely religious and keep strictly kosher, and they go to their mother's house or their, you know, their relative's house who aren't as religious as them, and they don't eat, they make them feel bad. That's not following the laws of the universe. That's following the rules that are written, and it should be followed, but then there's a way to do it so that nobody gets hurt. And the same with spirituality. There are people who go walking around all day telling people why they're wrong. That's not spiritual. That's using the excuse of, okay, I learned spirituality, so now I can tell you what's wrong. That's not following, that's the strange fire. That's the strange fire. Because the fire that should be in us is the fire that makes us closer to the Creator. And what are we doing here? What we're doing here is practicing to be closer to the Creator. So how we treat each other is how we treat the Creator. Think about that. How we discuss things with each other, how we treat each other, how we say hello to somebody, how we don't confront things, how we run away from our problems, how we, I know my, you know, or the criticism. I'm terrible at it. When someone criticizes me, I'm like, a wall, that's it. Unless I ask you, and then I have to be, then I have to be quiet and shut up and say, I asked for it. But the minute that we do that disconnect, that's the strange fire. So I want you to do a little workshop. I know my classes are different than Eliyahu's. Partner up with somebody and think about a strange fire that you do in your life. I think we're exactly, yeah, we're exactly even. Okay. Let's hear from everybody. Who has a strange fire? Yeah, go ahead.
So if I have friends or people around me that maybe get on my nerves, I'll say, oh, I just don't want that negativity around me, and I shut off. So I'm thinking I'm being super spiritual, but I just don't want to deal.
Right.
But I validate it instead of, you know, maybe not speaking to them if they're not good for me, but maybe wishing them well, maybe meditating for them or doing right. something positive. But I'm like, oh, I don't want that negativity. I'm like, really?
Who else? Anybody?
Okay, so it's kind of similar to what Michelle just said. Like, if I, let's say, for instance, go to a yoga class, if I put my mat down and there's somebody next to me that's like, the vibe isn't like strong, I'm like, I gotta move my mat, I can't do this one, that's a weirdo, or it's like, oh, giving me weird vibes, or I don't like whatever. And so sometimes I manage to kind of get bigger and say, okay, great, so that's the yoga, that's the meditation, that's what I need to do. And then it turns out it's a really nice person, which makes me feel even worse. So that kind of experience, I think, for me, just like right away thinking like, okay, I need my space.
Not like, which is not, listen, it's not bad once in a while to take your space. I'm not saying that we have to have people with us 24/7.
But this one isn't feeding my space, and that one needs to stay away, and that one's, you know. So anyway, so that's, I think, for me, I find sometimes that I'm judgmental, I guess, of people's energy or people around me.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, it turns out if I manage to just stay, either I'm okay and I went through it and it really wasn't that bad, or, you know, they didn't smell that bad. It was okay.
The basic thing of judging, I mean, we all judge. We all judge a book by its cover. We've heard it a million times, but we do it every single moment. And we're not angels. None of us are angels. And we do it all the time. But if we try and catch ourselves, that's already half the work. Half the work is to catch yourself, but then don't get stuck in catching yourself. Like, keep on going, meaning stop it at some point. So anybody else, strange fire? Okay, so there's a verse that calls the soul of a person a lamp of God. And why a lamp? Because think about it, a lamp's flame goes up, right? And it like wants to tear away from the wick. Right? It goes up. But at the same time, it goes down, and there's a grip bringing it down because it needs to drink from the oil. You know, like the old lamps where you have a wick and oil. So that push and pull, that conflict of energies, is really what produces the light. What produces, because we've come to this world to make a difference. There's no other reason. Like, you know, people who say, I don't know my mission in life is. Your mission in life is to make a difference. Make a difference. Start with one person. But if we don't seize that fire, then we're going to be consumed by it, because we're going to make up things like, okay, I'm not, you know, this person has bad energy, or we're going to make those things up. And that's the strange fire. We were put on this world to make a difference. To make a difference. So the striving to escape physical life is brought back by the spirituality. And when a person is too involved with, you know, whatever's going on and becomes a prisoner of his life, that's not good either. Because what happens is we become prisoners of our own life. What does that mean? We go through the motions. We go through the motions. Even if we're doing something that we think is sharing, we're still going through the motions. There are people who volunteer, right? So there are people who volunteer and they're just going through the motions. Yes, they're doing something nice, but are they there? I can tell you a lot of times, I don't know, I mean, it's bad, but a lot of times I'm talking to someone and I've checked out. I've checked out completely. The person is talking and I can answer, but I've checked out. And a lot of people do that because their mind is wandering somewhere else. I have to do this and I have to do this and I didn't get to do this. And even to just be there is part of that fire, that desire to be inside. So before I go on, because I found something really interesting of a parallel of stories about this story and a different story that I want to see if you can see the parallels. The laws of the universe, the tools that we have. So I know I'm going to sound redundant, but Shabbat is a tool. It's a tool that, what was the eighth day? And we're going to talk about it. The eighth day was full of joy and happiness. Everything was done. Shabbat is on that same level. That on the seventh day, you are connected to that joy, that happiness that existed at the time of the tabernacle. It's the same level. So there's someone who wrote a very interesting commentary about this portion. And it says that the Torah seems to be telling us something that if we really want to understand, we have to understand story A and story B. And I'm going to give you the elements and you're going to tell me, okay? So element A is the idea of time. It happened all on the eighth day. There were 7 days of dedication of the new tabernacle, and on the eighth day was the dedication, right? And that's when the tragedy happened, on the eighth day. Element number two, the idea of blessing. So Aaron picked up his hands and he blessed them, right? And after that, Moses and Aaron all together blessed the people. So idea of time and the idea of blessing. The third element is the sin itself. Right? They put fire in the pans and they brought it before the Creator and they brought a foreign fire because they weren't commanded to do it. Now, where else do we have this? If we keep on reading about the fire that came out, you know, throughout the tabernacle and consumed them, this other sin that we're speaking of in the Torah also has to do with consuming. What is consuming? Which means eating. The word in Hebrew for consuming can also mean eat. They were eating. And the children of Aaron died before the Creator, and that other sin also has dying in it. After the children of Aaron die, they're told to go to the tabernacle and carry out the corpses. So what does it sound like? Does anybody know? Yes, yes, Garden of Eden. Not really, let me explain why. So if we go back to the beginning, Garden of Eden, it's the very first sin ever in the Torah, right? The sin of the tree of knowledge. Because right before the portion of Shmini, we hear about the 7 days in which the tabernacle was dedicated, and then we're told that Aaron, the priest, had to sit at the doorway to the tabernacle night and day for 7 days. And they weren't supposed to do anything except just watch over the tabernacle on the eighth day. So where else do we find that? Not doing anything on the seventh day, right? Just watching over. Now, it seems like it's talking about Shabbat because you're supposed to watch over the Shabbat. You're supposed to not do anything. And the Shabbat is also something in which we sit and we don't do anything. They were sitting and watching the entrance of the tabernacle. We're supposed to sit on Shabbat and do nothing. For 6 days, God created the world. And on the sixth day, man was created. At the end of those 6 days, God blessed man. And then there was Shabbat. And then what was there? Right after Shabbat, it goes into the Tree of Knowledge story. Right after Shabbat. So it's like the eighth day. Now there's a comment that says that Adam and Eve actually sinned on the sixth day. But it's interesting because the Torah records that the sin happens right after it talks about Shabbat. So it's almost as if the Torah is saying that there was another day, a day where people eat, where they are commanded to, and then they were commanded from the Tree of Knowledge what to eat and what not to eat. And it says, have you indeed eaten from the tree which I commanded you not to eat? And Eve describes it as she took it from the fruit and she ate and she gave it to her husband and he ate too. So what's the connection here? Death, of course, comes to Aaron's children, but death also came to man in the Tree of Knowledge story. Why? Because before that, there was immortality. There was no death. Death was introduced after the Creator, after the sin of the Tree of Knowledge, and the Creator promises that the day that you eat from the Tree of Knowledge, you will die. You won't actually die. It's not actually dying, but they become mortal. So you become beings that can die. And death follows up on each of these sins. And of course, the exile follows as well. And so being taken outside of the tabernacle, right? The Aaron's sons and Nadav and Avihu's brothers are taking them out of the tabernacle. And what happens in the Garden of Eden? They're thrown out of the Garden of Eden. They're thrown out of the gates. So if we think about it, the parallels between this and this are pretty much the same. And we think about how they're parallel. What are they doing? The Torah seems to be saying that to understand the story of the death of the children of Aaron, we need to understand the process which death came into the world in the first place. And that is acknowledging the Tree of Knowledge story. And in the Tree of Knowledge story, the Creator has made a world for us, right? A whole environment of things that were created just for us, a universe, a solar system, a planet, animal, everything was made for us. He did that on 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rested. But on the eighth day, something went wrong. On the eighth day is when the sin happened in the Tree of Knowledge, and on the eighth day is when this story happened, after the tabernacle. So in that story, right, he makes a little home for God. Think about that. The tabernacle is a little home for the Creator, a place that the Creator could call home in our world, in our planet. And after building this world for the Creator, we rest for seven days. But on the eighth day, something went wrong. And what happened there? There, the Creator built a home for us. In the beginning, the Creator built a home for us. Seventh day, eighth day, something went wrong. So what does this mean for us? Why is it important? If you really want to understand what's going on, it's more about the temptations. Because think about it, what happened on the eighth day? Nadav and Avihu were tempted to put this offering before the Creator. They thought they were doing something right. There was nothing wrong. They were in a state of happiness and joy. So they were tempted to put this in front of the Creator. What happened in the Tree of Knowledge story? They were tempted to eat the fruit. And if you listen to the way the snake puts it in the story, eat from the one tree that God puts on limits because it has divine knowledge. Eat it and you will become like God who knows good and evil. So we eat the fruit, the tree, under the delusion that if we only eat from it, it will give us the lasting connection to the Creator. If we only put this sacrifice in front of the Creator, we'll be connected to the Creator. We become godlike. And we think we're listening to what the Creator is telling us. And by living alone, the part of what God only restricts from us is sometimes you think you're coming closer to the Creator, but you back away. When you are tapping into the universal system, when you're tapping into the laws that connect us to the Creator, that's when you're getting close. When you make up your own stories of this is how I want to do it, and that's how I want to do it, and you know, I don't feel like doing this today. Who feels like doing it? Nobody feels like doing it. I love texting everybody for Shabbat. I just love it. I love it so much. No, but but I know that that's part of the system. That's part of the system. So when we think that we're there is when we're not there. And not to become paranoid. We don't need to become paranoid about it. But when we have the 6 days and we think that we've worked hard the 6 days, I just want to rest. You know, I'm going to make my own connection. I love people who say that. I'm going to make my own connection. I need to rest. I'm tired. And we think it's right. And I'm not judging anyone, but that's not what it is. So now I want you to talk to each other again. And before, if you can still identify the strange fire, how can you eliminate that strange fire? But really, because if we write one thing down and work on it for 40 days, we can get rid of it. Because it becomes a habit. Go ahead. Okay, let's hear, guys, come on. I want every two to share, come on. Every group is sharing, let's go. You pick one from your group to share.
For me, I was talking about, you know, closing up, and I said, well, you know, if that's my strange fire, but when I'm hearing things or I'm getting super sensitive about what's coming externally to me, but inside I'm actually judging. I'm judging what I'm hearing, and then when Sandra was talking about, you know, the yoga mat, and she's judging too. So I'm saying that's such a central thing to what you and Eliyahu are always talking about, is to be careful about how you judge. So that would be my answer, is to just try to be aware of when you are making a judgment about another person.
Right, because really, when we think that we're closer to the Creator, or when we think that we're doing the thing that brings us closer to the Creator, it's actually the opposite. The restrictions, I hate to say restrictions because it has a different connotation, but like keeping Shabbat, or coming to Passover, or keeping kosher. Those things are what's going to bring us closer to the Creator. Meditating, praying, but there's also a way to pray. You know, the prayers that were created from the patriarchs, it's not just, you know, they sat around and decided to write a new prayer. It's certain things that should be followed. So yes, definitely judgment. All right, who's next? Go ahead.
Mine was also judgment, and my wanting to say how I feel or criticize, but now I'm going to take a step back and maybe they're not even ready to listen, or it's not my way to fix.
Right, so when we want to help people, it can become a strange fire. Now, if most of us are not there, but if you truly have no agenda, you only care about this person 100%, and that's why you're opening your mouth, it's not a problem. But most of us are not there.
Because then you could be a channel.
If you really, really, really have nothing, you know, like it's easier to help a stranger than it is to help someone that we know, because a stranger we have no history with. Okay, who's next? Michelle? Rebecca, one of you.
Well, we said if you really want to help them, then it may be best for you to distance yourself. Like, if you have that conversation, like, where are you coming from? Do you want to just not speak to the person because you're annoyed? Or do you not want to speak to them because maybe you're enabling this person? So where are you coming from? But the whole thing about judgment, I think another thing is maybe just the whole restriction, just taking a pause. Like, I'll share a story. It's very embarrassing, but hopefully you'll learn something.
Go ahead.
I have a colleague who, depending on the coffee, she's a little interesting with the moods. So this morning, I'm like, good morning. And she like shrugged and I shouldn't have said anything. And I was like, what was up with the attitude? And I was saying to maybe she's having a bad day. I shouldn't have said anything. 5 minutes later, she pulls me aside. I'm so sorry I snapped at you. I was having an awful morning. And then I'm like if you can just wait and just pause, and you never know what someone's going through. I think a lot of times, like the whole judgment thing, we're just so quick to, she's like, I had the worst morning, I didn't sleep last night, and I'm like thinking, why did you sleep? So I think maybe just the whole pause, like 5 minutes even,
right,
is very helpful
for
me.
Definitely.
So embarrassing.
Hey, you guys have anything?
Well, I had a
hard time with it, so he's controlling.
Okay. More conscious and
but you know where that comes from, right? Where does control come from? Fear.
To you,
huh? No, fear.
Fear. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fear. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then fear is not trusting the creator.
Exactly. And then it's a whole catch 22. You guys?
My roommate was making this comment about someone on TV that I didn't agree with. And I think I could say, you have every right to feel that way. However, I'm not comfortable. Like, just being able to stand up and say, as opposed to disagreeing with them and just thinking it'll go away if you do that. But it kind of needs to say, you know, I don't feel comfortable with you addressing that stranger on TV. That's God in them, whether you are, because I don't know what you're saying behind me, my back.
Right.
So I think just giving them, you know,
a polite way to
address it as opposed to just keeping it inside.
And think about it. Even in this portion, we read two scrolls this Shabbat because we have the portion of Shmini and then we have the red heifer. And if you think about it, it's in the same portion of what's happening here. So even there, we're given the tool of cleansing ourselves. What was the red heifer? The red heifer was to purify ourselves. So we're always, if we take a look at everything, we're always given the tools to deal with it. They exist. They're there. The path is there. We just have to open our eyes. And the 5 minutes that we wait can open our eyes. All right, I want to do a short meditation with everybody. Try not to fall asleep. Get everything off of your... Uncross your arms, uncross your legs. You can take 3 deep breaths in and out. And I want you to go to a safe place, a place that you feel comfortable in, if it's nature, if it's the ocean, if it's your home. Imagine that place. See yourself inside of it. Draw a room that feels comfortable to you, that feels safe. Think about a couch or a chair, something comfortable to sit in. And now I want you to imagine a screen in front of you. And slowly, slowly on that screen, you're going to see yourself. And I want you to picture one fear that you have. One fear that you have that's stopping you from balancing the spiritual and the physical. Take your time. You can create the pictures in your mind. And be patient with yourself. Try and imagine how it feels, what it looks like. What is it that's keeping you from being balanced, from connecting to the spiritual and physical? paths of the universe. Once you identify that fear, blow it up on the screen, make it bigger, and focus on it. I want you to imagine a fire, a red fire around that fear, consuming it, burning it, and leaving you with a burning desire to get closer to the Creator. Feel the warmth of the fire. And slowly, slowly, the image disappears from the screen. And you've taken with you the burning desire instead of the fear. The desire to connect to the path of the Creator. You can imagine yourself again in that room, in that chair, in that house, in nature, or the ocean. And when you're ready, you can take three breaths in and out, becoming aware of your surroundings again. And slowly you can open your eyes. Okay, who was able to meditate? Who was able to do it? Did you see anything?
Yeah.
You want to share? No. Okay. You want to?
I'm good.
Okay. So the point is, most of us are blocked by that fear. And if we just connect, again, Shabbat, Passover, all the things that we have going on. You know, it's not me having fun, again, texting and emailing and calling. And it's if we all have that desire to connect on that level, it's like the lamp. The lamp goes up and it's trying to reach for the sky. And we try and reach for the sky and make that difference. And we try and, you know, get there. And then something is pulling us down because we need the nurturing. You know, it's like the bed. You have the heaven and the earth and the Creator in the middle. So the lamp is going both ways, and it never dies out unless there's nothing nurturing it on a spiritual and physical level. Because think about it, the lamp keeps on going. The flame keeps on going. And even if it keeps on reaching higher and higher, as long as there's something there, it's going to keep on going. As long as it's able to suck the oil and bring it up, it's going to keep on going. So the physical and the spiritual is whatever we have here, we obviously need to be here and we need to reach for the stars. We need to reach to make breakthroughs. We need to reach to help people. We need to reach. And then it's bringing us the spirituality of that balance of being able to do something, of being able to say, okay, it's Shabbat. I need to, you know, it's really a good exercise. If you can close your phone for 24 hours, you know, in Israel, they have a addiction for iPhones. Like they have a rehab place for iPhones. It's true. Exactly. Because people are addicted. What is going to happen if you close your phone for 24 hours? Nothing. I promise you, nothing. So the burning desire, the strange fire, those are the things that we can take from this portion and to understand that in everything that we have, we also have the antidote for it, like the red heifer. Questions?
So I'm going to share something. A few weeks ago, I heard a lecture by Adam Newman and stop using my phone on Shabbat. Probably like a couple months ago, maybe a month and a half ago. And so when you said, you know, when you close it for 24 hours, what's going to happen? Nothing. A lot happens when you close it. You really let go and release.
Exactly.
And freedom, and you find something really, really great. So I think that a lot of the time when we're scared of something, we can surprise ourselves if we face it that something really nice is happening.
Exactly.
So something really not scary and something maybe that we didn't expect. So I mean, I thought it would be like nice because I probably belong to this,
I do.
Android and Android.
How many of you, Android, really? Yeah, how many of you wake up in the morning, the first thing you do is go to your phone?
Well, it's your alarm. First of all, you want to see what time it is. Then you see how many texts you have. Then you see what happened. And you get
it's awful. I don't know, it just feels
so like try, like instead of...
Have you ever been in a room where everybody else is looking at their phones and you just feel sort of like... you got nothing, but you still look at your phone.
You started scrolling through Facebook to see what's going on. So let me give you an exercise, okay? Instead of doing that, go to the website and listen to 10 minutes of a lecture. 10 minutes of, we have over 200 lectures there, and there are some that are broken up into 10 minutes, so you can actually just pick 10 minutes and listen to it. That's the first thing. Because I do it, I wake up in the morning, first thing I do is go to the phone. It's terrible.
Yeah. I should get a clock, so I can actually see the time when I check my phone.
Here, look. See how big this is?
Uh-huh.
That's an alarm clock. And it's on the phone.
Oh, it looks like the old clock.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So it's, you know, just get the old style. I used to have the old style until maybe 6 months ago. You know, the old style alarm clocks that you like plug in and there's a button and it's just an alarm clock. There's no radio. There's no, you know, it's not a phone. It's just an alarm clock. Today it's hard to get. You can't do that.
You know what I'm really impressed with? You ever watch Star Trek?
Of course.
Well, you know, they have their communicators. I mean, maybe they're just so beyond us that they don't use it all the time. They just use it to talk.
Yeah.
Or move from one, you know, to get being.
Because what's happened is we isolate ourselves. We're really checking our texts and our emails, but not because we want to be with somebody. Because we don't want to be with somebody, so we want to get rid of everything that needs to be done. We don't want to connect. If we want to connect, we pick up the phone and talk, or we go over. How many of us, I mean, what happened before phones? All of us here lived before phones. Almost all of us. We had to go to a person's house and knock on the door and see them. Right? We had to actually talk to a person. Can you imagine? You actually had to talk instead of texting, instead of not facing, instead of saying, you know, okay. So the point of Nadav and Avihu, going back to the portion, is even though they thought that they were doing what was right because of the state of happiness, the state of joy, the state of bliss that they thought they were in, it still wasn't a commandment from the Creator. They still were not told to do it. So if we come up with something that we think is 100% right, we need to check. Because even when I study, I have to know where it came from or if I'm making it up myself. And that's dangerous. You can't make things up by yourself. When, you know, in the Gemara and in the Mishnah, they study and they go to conclusions, but they base it on something. They don't just base it on their own, you know, out there. So for us to, like, go back and to think, okay, where did I learn this from? And that's where the religion and the extreme goes in, where people are doing things that they don't know why they're doing them. And not even because the Creator commanded it, but just because they heard that this is what needs to be done, but they don't know why. You need to know why. Why shouldn't they have lit the fire? They shouldn't have lit the fire because it wasn't a commandment from the Creator, but that's why. So everything we do, we need to know why. Why are we doing it? Was it something that came from the Torah, or did we just make it up? And even the reasons of why are there. You know, we have hundreds of hours on the web explaining why we do things. There's Shabbat, and there's Eliyahu did a whole thing on reincarnation, and what happens, and why you do this, and why you do that, and what happens if you do it. And there's millions and millions of things. Slowly, every day, 10 minutes, again, instead of the iPhone. I can try. I'll try. I promise you, I'll try and listen to my own lectures. But every day, 10 minutes. And then you'll see how that replaces the I think this is right. I think I should do this. Or everything is good now, so I don't need to do anything because everything is perfect. We're definitely not in that state. Okay, any more questions, guys?